From Detroit, that's trombonist Curtis Fuller and a group of great sidemen with Sop City. It's from his 1972 album, Smokin'. Curtis Fuller on trombone, Jimmy Heath on soprano and tenor sax, Bill Hartman on trumpet, Ted Dunbar on guitar, Cedar Walton on piano, Mickey Bass, on bass, and Billy Higgins on drums. Good old Curtis Fuller is almost 82 if he makes it to December. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and of course you know the Hurricane Matthew has been sweeping through the Caribbean, leaving in its wake a lot of devastation, and nowhere is it more evident than in Haiti, which again, I don't know what it is about this island, this half an island, that continues to be the target of so much misery. Joining us now is Kim Ives. He is the editor-in-chief of Haiti Liberté. Kim, great to see you and on the air again with us.
Thank you very much, Eutrice. It's always a pleasure to be with you, and I just should say I'm the editor-in-chief of the English section of Haiti Liberté. I'm just a member of the editorial board, so an editor here.
Thank you so much. What are you hearing? And I know today you are distributed, you've already gone to press. What are your lead stories, and what are they telling people?
Well, the lead story is, as one could be expected, Matthew's arrival in Haiti, which arrived on Tuesday, yesterday, in the morning at about 2 a.m. And basically, and luckily, cut through the tip of the southern peninsula between the cities, if people are familiar with Haiti's geography, of Lekai and Jérémy. It had veered slightly westward from a trajectory which was going to take it right up the middle over Port-au-Prince and Gonaïves and Cape Haitien. So they got a lot of rain in those cities, but the ones really hit by the heavy winds and rains were Okai and Jérémy. And we're talking 140-mile-an-hour winds, a Category 4 storm, and about over 2 feet of water were dumped in the course of about 24 hours. And the death toll, luckily, happily, fortunately, was less than usual. Only 3 people so far. One was a fisherman who last Friday was out on the ocean in the heavy seas, apparently sank his boat. And the other two were in the town of Port-Salut, which is right on the southern coast between those two cities of Jérémy and Okai, and a young 26-year-old man tried to rescue a child who fell into a rain-swollen river, and he unfortunately died. The child was saved in the end. And in another house, a man who was sick who couldn't leave, as the evacuation orders had asked, the ocean came in and drowned him. So only 3 so far. The death toll may rise in the coming days as areas that have been cut off by flooding are back online and able to give reports. But right now, it appears the death toll was, in fact, even lower than the Dominican Republic, where 4 people died from mudslides. Of course, the whole island of Hispaniola, both Dominican Republic and Haiti, did get quite a bit of rain from the outer arms of this huge storm. Now the big question, of course, is will the long-awaited national election for president and legislative seats go forward on Sunday So far, the Provisional Electoral Council has said they will go forward, that they've taken this type of contingency into account. However, the South is so devastated that many people are really wondering if that's going to be possible.
Well, the Hurricane Matthew comes shortly, I mean, in terms of relative terms of time, after the 2010 earthquake, and we still have people basically who are homeless. How are they making out with this hurricane compounding problems?
Well, yes, there's about 60,000 people who are still homeless. These include not only the victims of the earthquake 6 years ago on in January of 2010, but also those who are in the area of Ansapit in the far southeastern tip of Haiti, who have set up a kind of provisional community after having been expelled by the Dominican Republic, either officially or unofficially, because they have parents or ancestors who are Dominican, who are Haitian. There was a law which passed, the two-year anniversary was last year, which essentially said anybody since 1929 who has irregular immigration status, this was a law quite infamous, known as 168-13 in Dominican Republic. Anybody who has undocumented parents is no longer Dominican, even if they were born there. So you don't have birthright citizenship. And so this is why you have a number of very flimsy housing and tents in the Ansapit area. So between the two groups, that's about 60,000 people. So the winds were very bad, and of course anybody who was in a tent would have lost it. Most people, though, and again I have to say the government of provisional president Jocelyn Privert continues to sort of defy the odds, and they did a very effective mobilization, getting about 18,000 people, or that was the amount they had the capacity for. I don't know the final number, but several thousand people were relocated to about 700 shelters around the country, and evacuated from the coastline, etc. And this is one of the reasons why the death toll was so low. And anybody who was in a tent or a flimsy building of that sort, temporary structure, as they call it, would be moved to a more secure place. So essentially, the role of the government, both in conscientizing the people about the storm and actually moving them and having food and blankets and water for them, was very commendable.
Well, how is the aid effort going?
Well, that now is where we have to really keep an eye on things, because as we know, particularly in Haiti, this is often, as the U.S. ambassador said after the 2010 earthquake, the gold rush. And so you're going to have a lot of these sort of NGOs and so forth who come down and essentially make money off of other people's distress. So that's one. But the other element is, of course, the U.S. military, which is said they are going to send the USS George Washington, a huge aircraft carrier, as well as an amphibious transport dock called the Mesa Verde. So these ships will be going down to provide, one supposes, air relief and transport, etc. There are also nine marine helicopters and about 100 Marines that the U.S. Southern Command has deployed and have stationed now on Grand Cayman in preparation to carry out relief operations. So, again, we have to watch these things carefully and make sure it's not another attempt to increase the political and military occupation of Haiti by foreign forces. The U.S. has essentially been doing this for the past 12 years since they orchestrated the coup d'etat against former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. They've been doing it through the United Nations military force called the MINUSTA, which is drawing down now. It has been headed by the Brazilians, which, needless to say, following the coup in Brazil against Dilma Rousseff and a general, I could say, malaise throughout the region with the never-ending Haiti peacekeeping operation, this is winding down. So will Washington somehow try to pump it up again with this new disaster? Well, we'll see. But I think the hit was not quite direct enough to warrant that. So,
well, thanks a lot. I know you're following the story, and we will contact you again to get some updates, because I think there will be a major problem in the aftermath, of course, because so many people were dislocated already, and added to the group who had not yet been relocated after the earthquake. And we have environmental issues that will compound that, because now comes the question about crops that have been destroyed and needing to be fed and so forth. So we'll talk again.
Exactly.
Thanks so much for your update today.
Well, thank you, as always, Utrice, for being there and for keeping Haiti at the top of your priority list.
Thank you so much. Well, I know you paid rapt attention to the great debate. Oh, you didn't know there was one? Yeah, there was one last night. Mike Pence and Tim Kaine, the vice presidential candidates, squaring off with each other. I made sure to miss it. And from the reports today, it didn't seem like I missed a lot. And it really brings me to the topic I wanted to start us discussing, all of us to take a look at. And that is, you know, why do we continue playing their game? That's the question. This election year is an absolute stinker for millions and millions of voters who feel compelled, just the same, to do their civic duty and vote. But this should be a year of reckoning. That is my position. It should be a year of reckoning. It should be the year that we ask the question, and we should answer it too, why do we continue to play their game? Why do we do it? I'm hoping you can help provide some answers here, because it seems as though, in the end, even when we supposedly are independent or outside of the electoral carnival, or at least we profess that, we're nonetheless participants in it. What does it take? What will it take for us to decide we're not going to play this game anymore? We just are not going to do so. I ask this question because with all of the, you know, when you talk with people who say, well, we're progressive, or I'm independent, or I'm just a non-voter, we're still playing the game. Because the question is, what is the alternative? Even if you subscribe to an independent party or third party, okay, it's still participating in the game of politics. It still presumes that somewhere there will be a vote, and a person may get elected eventually if they keep at it, and they will be part of this process. Don't we want to be outside of this process altogether? Isn't this the time for us to really tool up and come up with something that is very different and self-sustaining, that does not march to the tune or to the beat of that drum? It's done. It's over with. Even I saw an article in the Washington Times saying that, speaking of the, they were referencing the debate last night between the vice presidential candidates, and they saying, well, at least they didn't bore us to death. Now, what kind of a state of affairs are we in when we are glad simply not to be bored to death? And yet the business of government keeps rolling along, the business of determining who is going to run this country and have, by extension, inordinate impact on the rest of the world. Why are we lending credence to this? Why are we participating in this? Even when we say we're not, by going to a third party. I think it is time to be serious about this question. I mean, Bernie Sanders came along in this election cycle and said, well, we've got a movement, an independent movement. But independent movements are not new. And, of course, we saw that he committed the same violations, the same acts of treachery as Jesse Jackson and a bunch of folks after him did, essentially participating and making sure that it turns out this is going to be a two-party system. I mean, a third-party effort endorsing a two-party system. And now he's fully stumping for Hillary and the Democratic Party. And he's even saying to his supporters, you know, go with Hillary. That's the best thing to do. Now, on one level, he could say, well, that's a pragmatic idea, because in any event, some one party will win. And it does no good on a pragmatic level to just be outside, completely outside of the system, because we don't have an infrastructure. We don't have an infrastructure yet that could independently sustain a candidate. But, you know, had Bernie stayed the course, we might have gotten close. If Jill Stein stays the course and gets supported, she'll get close. But so far, it doesn't look good. Maybe she will do between 2 and 3%, which is exactly where the Green Party has been for several years now. 3% of the vote. But let's just say, let's conjecture, let's fantasize a bit, that a third party miraculously won the vote for president. Without an infrastructure in Congress and a supporting infrastructure throughout the various states, will it accomplish anything? What are we doing here? Are we running to be part of the political process as it exists? I don't want any part of it. It is corrupt. It is, in fact, exceedingly undemocratic. It has its own mind. And it is not about looking to the needs of the people and responding to the evident needs of the people. It's about people who see politics as an entrepreneurial effort and endeavor where they could make money and gain status while they screw the rest of us. But I am troubled by the fact that we can't seem to get our minds in gear about just getting out of this system. Just get out of it. And use this time, a very strong effort to construct something else. Let me give you a hypothetical. Suppose, just as the duopoly is going about its business for elections, we go about our business for elections. We don't have to be part of that process, but we could signal a definitive turn away from business as usual politics by erecting our own conventions, our own elections, if you will, so that at the end of the election season, they would have their winners, and so would we. We would have a bona fide determination by a lot of people who feel exactly the same way on what we agree upon as the major issues of the day. But I don't know how far we're going to get by saying we profess to be outside of this process, and yet we are cooperating with it. We are part of it. And we are following the dictates that they set. These are their rules. This is their creation. We happen to be victims of it for the most part. And I can't understand why we continue, even as we profess that we don't agree. We continue to be part of the system. We need something different. We need our own elections. Let them go ahead and do their thing. They've been doing it and so long now. They started it. They have the science down pat. From now until the foreseeable future, we know it's going to be a Republican and a Democrat. Okay. Why do we have to go through this process? Why do we have to pretend, in a sense, and frustrate ourselves? We are not gaining political ground. We're just not getting anywhere by buying into their mode of operations, the way they operate. So I ask you, when do we decide, or is it even wise to decide, that we should not be part of this game, part of this process? And how do we break away from this? Because it drives me crazy. It really does. As much as I can't stand it, as much as I'm really clear that this is not a good, it is corrupt to the core. And yet, there seems to be no viable way out. And by that I mean, I'm not talking about the election of any candidate during election season. That is not a way out. If a libertarian were elected right now, it wouldn't matter, except symbolically, because there's no infrastructure there to sustain that independent candidacy. So they still win. I go back to Bernie Sanders. Here is a man who says he's a democratic socialist, whatever that means by his terminology. He was in the Senate, still is in the Senate, will be going back to the Senate. But as a lone ranger, the best that he can do is to kind of see if he could form some kind of alliance with the people that we can't stand and with a party that is absolutely oppressive and with a system that is oppressive. So even if you have one Bernie Sanders in all of Congress, right, one out of 535 people, he is not really going to have the impact that we think he will have or that he says he will have. It's just not going to happen. I'm not suggesting by any means that we shouldn't try or that we just need to, you know, just give up on the whole thing. I'm saying the work that we have to do clearly is about constructing an entirely different paradigm, entirely different. The country should be abuzz come election time. Communities should be humming about electing their own senators, their own city council members, even if they think this is symbolic. The idea is you construct an alternative. This is what all people do who understand they are oppressed. You do not say you're oppressed and then you join in with your oppression. We should have our own shadow government. Coming out of this election, okay, you have your shadow, you have your president, we have our shadow president. That's right. That's what I think ought to happen. You elect a Congress, a member of Congress, we have our shadow Congress member from our various districts. And our job is to put them up against the wall, challenge them on the things that they're doing. We have blatant examples of crimes being committed, of the corruption of this government, going all the way up to the White House. And there's no effective buffer against it. There's no effective challenge to it. And we continue to fool ourselves into thinking, oh, well, we are not like them. We're different. And therefore, if you get elected, some things will change. No, my point is, even if you get elected, you're still part of the system. You are still part of the system. And it is their system that they organized and scientifically devised to keep the rest of us in check for all time. We need to have our own elections. I don't care what people think about that. You know, if it were to be reacted to as some kind of a crazy scheme, as an unpatriotic act, in defiance of established order, great. All I know is in the meantime, people are yearning for different kinds of leadership where they have a greater participation, meaningful participation, and away from this death-inducing system that we have. So, what should we do about how do we answer this question? Do we continue to play their game? If we play their game, we will get exactly what we've been getting. No matter who pops up as an, quote, independent candidate, it doesn't matter who is an independent candidate. Because you haven't arrived at a point of critical mass. And that's the bottom line. You haven't yet arrived at a point of critical mass. And it has taken this long to come to that realization that people have been doing this kind of work for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Still saying, well, we are different from that system, and yet you're playing by the system's rules. You haven't constructed a workable alternative. You haven't even attempted it. This should be the year of reckoning, so we don't continue fooling ourselves and we don't fritter away our energy. We're either serious or we're not. And we either get to work or we just shut up and stop complaining. It really rankles me when I get into conversations with people who are very clear the system is rotten to the core. The people who are elected are substandard material. They have no interest at all in promoting the aggregate good. They are in politics for the money, for the status, but mostly for the money. And when we look at a Hillary Clinton, my God, we look at a Donald Trump, and this is the best that this country could offer at this time to all of its people. But we're still seeing those people who understand that still participating in the system. By now, at this point, I'm not trying to be condemnatory, really. I really am not. I'm saying we have to get realistic and fashion a logical alternative. And it isn't just about a party. It is because even if you have a party, you're still playing by their rules. You still have to get X number of signatures to qualify for the ballot. You still have to, get X percentage of the latest polls in order to participate in a debate. They own it. They own the system. They own all aspects of it. It's time for us to make a break, a clean break. Imagine if when election season opens, they have to talk about what's going on with the Democrats, what's going on with the Republicans, but what's going on with the shadow government. People are taking care of business in a way that they see fit, in a way that the government routinely has ignored all these years. The response has been, well, we formed independent parties. Okay, I get that. It's a noble effort. But it's still within the confines and the realm of a system that controls everything. I'm saying move it along a couple of notches. Get out of that too and be completely independent, whether you get elected to Congress or not. Let's take a look at what the situation that Washington, D.C. is in. All these years, Washington, D.C. has no real representation at all. And why wouldn't Washington, D.C. come to the logical conclusion? You know, they have a shadow government, really. They have a shadow Congress member of Congress. But they have no power. They have no vote. And they've been living like serfs in a feudal system for all these years. Break completely. Create your own government. They can say it's illegal if they want. But the people have a right to organize their own government. And even if, as you begin, you have no real authority in Congress, trust me, if you're serious enough, it would only be a matter of time before people start worrying about what it is you're going to do. You pass laws. You pass all kinds of laws. They may never be enacted in the city council. They may never be enacted in a state legislature. But that doesn't mean that in your mind, these are the things that will work. You are fashioning your own government. Because they clearly are not doing it, or they're not doing it well, or they're not doing it justly and right. It's time to get serious. If we say we're not going to play by these rules, the rules that are in effect now, where you have crooks, absolute criminals, running things, It's lawlessness like we've not seen before. And it is countenanced by other lawless people in Congress and in the state legislature and in the city councils. They have no more right to govern than we do. So we have to go beyond parties. We have to develop processes. We have to develop infrastructure, and we run our own government. Even if they don't recognize it, it doesn't matter to me. It will eventually take hold when, for example, on a city council level, the people who choose to participate respond to a referendum. You have no idea how scared the system will be. If by the end of the day or by the end of the week, however long this voting process goes, you have a result that is legitimate, that is quantified, this is what the people say. They have had a vote. Now, if you, as an organized government, at a city council, in the Democratic, traditional Democratic city council or Republican city council, you've taken a vote and you're going to do X on the issue, on a particular issue. And we find that people in this process have come out and voted, and this is their view. What are you going to do? We cannot continue to profess that we are outside of this because it is unworkable and still work within it. And we see no signs really of a definitive decision to make a total break. It's not visible yet. So that's the question. We could start this conversation today. We won't end it today, but we'll start it today. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Brooklyn, Willie, you're on the air.
My dear beloved.
Hello, Willie. How are you?
How are we?
We are okay. What do you think about this idea of breaking completely in every way possible?
I've been broken from it a long time ago. Because, you know, again, Uchi, I pointed out to you that when I spoke to you that the two most important things anyone can give, number one, respect and information. Simple. The political system has no respect for us. For example, here comes Mr. Bernie Sanders, and we just throw our votes at him. He didn't ask for it. Then how could he work for you? You see what I'm saying? Now, for me, personally, the doors for Mr. Sanders and Mr. Trump, it was opened by Barack Obama. That door was just like King opened door for certain people. We know we can't mention names. But these doors were opened for you by us. Now, my position is, in order for me to even consider you, you must, I mean, just for me to, for you to get my attention, you have to do two things. You must address the assault on Mr. Park and the Nation Islam, because I know your record. I know what you've done. You cannot disrespect that brother and the nation because of the long-standing work that they've done within our community. So just to get my attention, you have to repudiate those who did this. You see what I'm saying?
But the issue, I understand that, but I'm talking in the large scheme of things as a group.
Yes.
Everybody would have a specific agenda, a specific issue that is relevant to them, and that is understandable, and that is to be expected. But I'm saying, what is the overarching view here about constructing something completely different, like a shadow government? We should be doing that. This is where I think we make real the definition of democracy. You are self-governing, and why not just take that to a different level and say, here, we have regular referenda on different items, we take votes, and the people have voted, and this is exactly what we think. And it is completely different from what you're doing as the official government, and therefore we won't recognize you.
Well, first of all, we have to begin to respect ourselves and support one another. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, we will have to respect that. But I'm talking about, is this, in your view, a workable idea?
Yes, absolutely. The Nation of Islam is demonstrating that. They don't care what they do. They're doing what they have to do. But we will not finance it, and we will not support it.
But in any event, here's the thing. The Nation of Islam is like most any other organization.
Yes.
It is doing things its way. And it has put in place a structure that suits, as is compatible with who and what they are. And it's efficient. Right. The Mormons have it. Orthodox Jews have it. Muslims have it. So understandable that they would construct systems that are suitable to their needs in every way. I'm saying now, but they're not. These systems are not for everyone that they have constructed. What is the probability of constructing a system that could incorporate everyone?
Well, we have PRN. We have PRN. Look. The people who listen to PRN, I'm sure none of them will vote for Trump or Hillary. None of them, because they know. But the problem is that the listeners to PRN, we have failed. And we just complain, cry, and moan. That's not good enough. What are you doing? You see what I'm saying?
Because that's the question on the table right now. I'm glad you rephrased it, but that's it.
It's a job. You, Gary, and we have truth on our side. That's number one. And the people within PRN, they're doing their work. And people are hungry for information like this. The listeners are not doing their job. Because if we were, everybody would know about PRN, know what their agendas are, and be very clear on what we have to do.
Well, you got us started today. You got us started today.
Think about it.
So we'll continue. We'll continue the discussion. There's no question about that. But thank you so much, Willie, for calling today. We're getting close to time, but we have enough time to take more calls. From New Hampshire, Cornelia, you're on the air.
Thank you, Utrice, for all you are doing. And yes, I concur completely with your analysis And the best articulation that I know of as far as what we need to be doing, this is a challenge to power, and one of the best methods that I am aware of is articulated by Dr. Jean Sharp, who has written the definitive study on nonviolent action and resistance, both theory and practice. His work is a guide for many, many of the Velvet Revolutions all around the world. And what you are articulating is, in effect, what he terms intervention. Nonviolent action falls into three categories: protest, non-cooperation, and intervention. And yes, I agree, we need to not cooperate with a thoroughly corrupt system. And yet, non-cooperation alone is not enough. What we need to do is to develop intervention, which is an alternative, parallel form of governance. What that is, I don't know. But it needs to be clearly researched and the work done to develop it. Our country was founded on these exact principles. The Boston Tea Party was protest, non-cooperation was non-payment of the stamp tax to King George III of England, and the Continental Assembly was a parallel illegal form of governance prior to the revolution, after which it became the Continental Congress. The Committees of Correspondence was a very small group of people scattered throughout many of the early colonial states that developed this parallel form of governance against King George III of England. This is something that is part of our own heritage. It's in our traditions. And these are tools and methods that are accessible to us. However, it takes a lot of work, obviously. And I don't think we're doing our homework, quite frankly. And I appreciate the questions that you are raising, because I believe they are directly on point with what we need to do to effectively challenge corrupt power and develop an effective intervention.
If this is what you think, do you think that there would be enough people who would see the logic of this to just say, look, we have to take matters into our own hands? We have relegated power to people who clearly aren't able to exercise it with good judgment, and people who just don't care, so we should take a more active role here. Do you think this is going to appeal to people, or do they think, or are they so entrenched in this system as defined that they would have a hard time breaking away from it?
In my personal perspective and viewpoint, and this is only a personal opinion, it seems to me that it depends which sector you're talking about. Obviously, a large percentage of the American population, regardless of color, regardless of class, and it surprises me how many people who come from a noble working class, blue-collar heritage have bought in. A large percent of our population has been seduced by materialistic greed, in effect, our materialistic comforts. And that silences, or had silenced, prior to the assault into a middle-class society, had silenced a lot of potential opposition. As people begin to hurt more, I think this message is spreading, and the receptivity to these messages will spread. The one percenters, I don't think they're going to, the vast majority, there is a very notable, small, exceptional group of one percenters who will be very receptive to this message, but the vast majority, of course, will counter this. However, the 99% of us, I think there's a very high chance of a growing acceptance if one can come forward with the homework. It's not up to me to define how others should move, but I believe that this approach, we need to articulate some of the potential directions. I don't know what will fit for others. I mean, that's obviously a collective decision and a collective choice that needs to be made. But I believe that a small group of people probably needs to do some serious homework to define a range of options to choose from. And I do believe that the self-liberation guide that Jean Sharp has produced, which is about 900 pages of guided reading, but if you go specifically to the power sections, there's some very focused reading. And this is work that basically with Colonel Robert Helvey, he has developed strategic military planning. How do you define, how do you apply this to a military military strategic planning? How do you apply that to a nonviolent campaign? This is work. These are tools we did not have 40 years ago when I was a founding member of the Clamshell Alliance opposing nuclear power and popularizing that resistance throughout this country. And by way of full disclosure, I need to say that I am chair of the Albert Einstein Institution, and I work very closely with Gene Sharp, who's been a mentor to me since I was a teenager. However, it's not up to me to define how others should move, but I think that some of us need to do our homework and define some of the options, some of the potential directions, because I think that there's a very large... I don't fundamentally believe in apathy. I think people feel disempowered. And when you show people how much power, the power of the people holds, and the potential for that, people will act. I think people really do care. And with climate disruption now becoming more and more blatantly obvious, even with corporate whiteouts, I think that more people will be far more receptive to constructive, positive directions. Gandhi said that you must always balance the constructive program with the active protests. And I think it's far too easy to protest and oppose what we're... you know, against, it's much harder to come up with constructive programs, the active, forward-moving, positive directions. And I think that's the lead forward, and the best options going forward is to define a range of options and begin to define and construct positive, forward-moving, constructive directions ahead.
And that's exactly, I mean, we're on the same wavelength here.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I think the time has come for us to just, you know, get off our butts and decide, make a decision. Are we going to go along with this any, you know, for another 10, 20, 30, 40 years?
No.
Is this what our future holds? Or are we going to take seriously our own right to leadership and to fashion a course out of this morass, because it's only going to get worse?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed your call very much. Thank you for calling today. Well, you know, that brings us to the end of the program, because we only have a few more minutes, and I do like people to stretch out and say exactly what they want to say. I don't like the idea of constricting your time. So we'll continue this discussion tomorrow, and with the idea of planting a seed and coming up with some ideas of how we can reclaim our authority as so-called voters. But the idea is that we are citizens, and we automatically have this authority. Nobody has to give it to us. We have this authority. And if you could imagine networks beginning to formulate their own decisions as shadow governments, little shadow governments all over the place, it means that they're paying attention at ground level to the impact of policies on people. Imagine if a network of churches says that every month there will be a meeting, or every so often there will be a referendum on ABC questions, three questions. If you have networks of churches, the same ones now that are being reached out to by Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and others, saying, vote for me, the level of input would be far more meaningful when they construct their own systems. And imagine if you have 200 churches just doing that, or block associations just doing that. You're beginning your own government. And it is necessary. It really is. Because it's at ground level where the pain is being felt. And we've been hoodwinked for too long without actually participating in our own political outcomes. And we have to do that. It's not just voting. It's not enough. It's not enough. The people we are asked to vote for are not worth it. The system is not worth it. It doesn't qualify. It's substandard. And since we are going to be on the receiving end of all of this substandard stuff, we certainly have the opportunity to do better. So why not consider something else? What would that something else be? I don't know. But I know that there's a potential here to construct something else. And we do have things that can be put to work immediately, except we don't consider them in our normal scheme of things. Thanks so much for joining me today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. A pleasure and a great privilege always to be in your company. See you tomorrow.